Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. And today, that interesting person is my friend, Ellen Rogan. Ellen is the co-author of the New York Times best-selling book, Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. She does a lot of other really fun things, but I'm super excited to have her on the show today. Hello, Ellen. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Oh, well, that makes two of us because I'm really excited to be here with me as well. And one thing also exciting me is I have from our sponsor, Sketchbook Brewing, their Brabant, which is a Belgian-style dark ale. It's a very delicious beer, not something I normally drink, but it's dark, deep, a little hoppy, a little malty. I'm digging it. So thank you, Sketchbook, for helping bring B3 to all our wonderful listeners. And Ellen, here's my question for you. What do people get wrong about mindfulness?
People get wrong about mindfulness. Well, first of all, most people don't actually know what it really means because there's a lot of definitions.
Yeah,
I think we should probably start there. I was going to go super tactical.
Yeah,
but
well,
it's
what is it?
It's a funny word. So the kind of general simple definition is being aware.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a kind of meditation technique.
Okay.
And I think that's where people lean to begin with is thinking about it as, I do mindfulness meditation. But
okay.
You can have mindful listening, which is really awesome, where you're really being aware and super present and listening to what's the other person saying. You can have mindful walking. You can certainly have a mindfulness meditation practice. It's a pretty broad term.
Okay. Okay. So really just kind of the idea of awareness through some sort of activity. Like it's kind of doing something with awareness.
Or not doing something and just being aware.
Or
one definition. I think you know, we've talked about how I've been in this process of being trained as a search inside yourself leadership teacher. And
okay.
This is not one of their definitions, but one of the earliest definitions that I heard that I really love is just noticing. Like just noticing something you haven't noticed before.
Right. Right.
And
a lot of times we don't, correct?
Like more than a lot of times, like most of the time. And someone asked me, there's a woman I worked with for at least 6 years, and she retired, and this woman who was planning a retirement celebration for her said, do you know what color her eyes are? So I talked to this woman for close to seven years, worked with her a lot. I had absolutely no idea what color her eyes were.
Okay.
Like how we don't notice things, and it could happen with someone even a lot closer to you than that.
Sure. Sure. It'd be an interesting question to ask, you know, your three best friends, you know what color their eyes are.
Right.
Right. You know, hopefully your romantic partner, you know, just in case you get quizzed, you don't want to get busted on that one. But yeah, your best friends, I'm just realizing I don't know if I pay that close of attention to even be able to answer that question.
Right.
Okay. So what do people get wrong about it then? Because the reason I ask is, mindfulness does seem to have become kind of a buzzword lately, right? And I know even the program you just mentioned stemmed from, is it Google?
Born in Google. It's been spun off since then.
Right. So there's these really big companies that are kind of seeing the value of something that could be considered a very soft and mushy thing, but they're seeing some real business results. They're pushing it out. So it's kind of become a buzzword, but then when you have a buzzword, people always, you know, misconstrue it. So I'm just curious, as you've gone through that, you know, the training, do you see people making a mistake with mindfulness?
the viewpoint mistake that I think people have is that they think it's really hard and that you have to sit on a meditation pillow for 20 minutes to an hour or even longer a day to get any kind of benefit. The cool thing about mindfulness is it can be, so that is more of like a dedicated practice. You certainly can do that. You can start with a minute or 5 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever works for you. You know, there's certainly some benefits from doing it longer periods, but there's also beautiful benefits of just a shorter, more integrated practice. So like throughout your day, you know, maybe periodically I'll turn off the radio in the car and just try to mindfully drive. Just be right there. What am I noticing? And what am I noticing in my thoughts? Because we can't, the other thing I think people make the mistake is they think, okay, when you're meditating or doing a mindfulness practice, there's no thoughts. And that's ridiculous. That's what our minds do, is just throw thoughts at us all the time. And the practice is to not get carried away with them and to just, if possible, be able to observe the thoughts and, and notice that they're there. One of the things that I think people also get wrong is to think they're doing mindfulness meditation practice right when they are just focused on, if it's a focused meditation, maybe you're focusing on the breath as your area of attention. And that when they're focusing on their breath, they're doing it well. And when they're lost in thought, that's bad. Right. And really the work comes, like the building of that mental bicep muscle, is when you notice that you're lost in thought and you go back to your anchor of, let's say it's your breath. That's the real work. Right. That's when the benefits come. And I don't think most people understand that. I think they think it's when they're in the state of just no thought or total focus.
I'm chuckling as you go through this, not because you're so right on. One of my more popular articles that I've ever written for my blog is I'm good at meditation because I suck at it, basically.
And it's kind of perfect.
And it's kind of that idea, you know. And I've had a meditation practice pretty consistently for almost, 15, 20 years. And I would say I'm kind of bad at it. But that's actually where I've gotten all the benefit from it is just as you said, realizing, wow, I have a really busy, you know, in Buddhism, they call it the monkey mind. You know, I have like three monkeys for a mind. And you're right. It's that idea of some of the best, I think, learning for me has just been able to get up from the meditation cushion and go, wow, my mind was everywhere. But I noticed it being everywhere. It wasn't that I'm like in this state of, you know, the whole time.
Right. Right. And one of the cool things for me is my practice is, I too have had that long of a practice, although most of that was practicing transcendental meditation, which is awesome. It's mantra based. And through my involvement in this program, which is more mindfulness based, which is a different kind of meditation, like whether you're doing Zumba or kickboxing, it's just another way of doing it, is the beauty of actually noticing what my thoughts are when I can do that. So being aware of the thoughts and being aware how they come and go and the ones that are recurring and looping. And that's been such a helpful exercise. And much of the time they just come and go, just kind of like, you know, if you're laying on the ground watching the clouds come and go, you don't necessarily get attached to one cloud. And the times when I can not get attached to that thought are, it's really cool. It's really fun to watch that. And to be able to kind of see the thoughts that are reoccurring has also been fascinating.
Right. A saying I once heard that I really liked is, you don't have to believe everything you think.
Right.
And yeah, that idea of not getting attached. But I also kind of like what you were saying earlier, that you don't have to have a meditation practice. You and I have bonded over our meditation practices for sure. But I also don't want people to think that they have to go to a meditation center, or they don't have to have a meditation cushion or have it be this other part of their life. To your point, you can integrate it very simply into your life if you want to, right?
100%. And it looks different for everyone. I mean, if we, you know, if we just now take one deep breath and notice our inhale and the long, slow exhale, that's a little mini meditation. You know, it can be a micro practice, or just if you're, you know, as we're, I'm sitting right now. I don't know if you're sitting or standing, David, because we're,
I'm sitting.
Yeah. Like if you can just notice your feet on the floor and maybe where your body hits the chair and just for a moment, put our attention there, you know, another little mini meditation practice.
Right on. Here, you know what? Hold on. We're going to pause for 15 seconds. I doubt if you're listening to this that you've ever had a podcast that allows you to meditate in the middle of the podcast. We're going to pause for even just 10 seconds. Take a big deep breath in, big deep breath out. Pay attention where you're at. I'm going to do it. Ellen, you can do it too. Let's go on 3, 3, 2, 1. So cool, right? I mean, that was 8 seconds, and all of a sudden, just a little shift, but not a big one, right? You're not like saying, hey, I'm going to change the world. It's just gets you back to where you're at, right?
Yeah. I want to share one practice that I learned through this Search Inside Yourself that I found so helpful in business. And they call it a minute to arrive. Like when you're about to start, you can do it by yourself. Where I've seen some really fun benefits is before you start a meeting, and where to just, and it might sound like it would be weird or hokey, but I've done it in several occasions without people that knew I was going to be doing this, or whether I knew they were meditators or that we talked about mindfulness.
Right.
And I'll just say, you know, often our heads are not where our bodies are, and we've all kind of come to this meeting with different things happening before we got here, and maybe there's things that are going to be happening when we leave, and would it be okay if we just take a moment to just get present? And it can be that simple, and it can be quiet. I've typically then gone on and say, okay, will you guys play with me for a little bit with this, and I have them focus on their breath, just like you just did, or feel your feet on the floor. And I did this yesterday. I had a meeting I was hosting at this bank where I'm on the board of directors. And we had people that kind of came. Actually, they were people who came from Eastern Europe. And I was having someone come in and speak to them about marketing. It was really cool. And they all came from different parts of the city. And I did this with them. And all of a sudden, it got everyone super present to hear the message that was coming. And there was just like a collective exhale, literally and metaphorically.
Right. And it's so true. A lot of times we go through our days and there's just so much going on. It's funny you say that. You made a comment earlier about Zumba because, you know, I'm a Zumba instructor. But a lot of times before class or right at the beginning of the class, we'll have our warm-up. And I'll often say, hey, let's get our bodies warmed up and our minds here, right? Mm. Because so many people are kind of running in from other things and from their family and from work. And this is like their 50 minutes where they get to kind of exercise their bodies and be there for themselves. But I'm like, hey, let's get here. And you can kind of see in the next minute or two that the energy changes, right? Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is you and I are having this conversation about mindfulness, but I would, if you look at our bios, we're both relatively hardcore business people, right? You know, you didn't come up as a yogi. I mean, you're best, you know, New York Times bestselling author in the financial space. What impact has this had for you, or what impact have you seen in your business life based on mindfulness practices?
Yeah, I would go twofold. I'll start as being a business owner, and then I'll talk about when I deal with people around personal finance issues. So as a business owner, I would say that having a meditation or contemplative practice is probably the best thing I ever did for my business.
Oh, wow. Okay.
With that, you know, I've done a lot of different kinds of personal growth and business coaching, and I'm always happy to invest in my business and my professional advancement. But this is something that not only affected me, that I think I was a better mom, a better wife, more present when I could, when I came home from the office, but I think I was a better leader for the people in my office and absolutely a better financial advisor when I was doing that with my clients to be more calm. And so for many years, I was had a wealth management firm and worked with people individually. I don't do that anymore. I'm more doing it on a broader scale in terms of speaking. But people have so much stress around their money. And what I found is that when you can have a way to calm yourself down, when you're feeling stressed, it makes such a difference in your ability to make decisions. I mean, this has actually been scientifically proven out in our ability to be less reactive when you have a meditation practice and be more present, among many other things. And so that was really what, I don't think it was initially what brought me to it, but it's what brought me to bring these skills into my business life and into my speaking. You know, for years I used to, when I'd speak, I'd say, oh, you might want to consider a meditation practice. And now I actually feel like it's crucial. It's as important as it is to exercise and take care of your health and drink water and all the other things we've been taught are important for us to do for our well-being. I think having some kind of mental hygiene process is really important too. We live in such a chaotic, stressful world.
Right. I love that idea. Mental hygiene. You're going to take care of your body. You might as well take care of your mind and your soul.
Yeah.
It seems simple, but probably pretty important.
And this is why all these big companies are putting it in. I mean, it started this, Google started this program. And they hired, because they're Google with, you know, unlimited funds, like some of the best leaders in mindfulness and emotional intelligence to help create the curriculum. It was so successful. They had thousands of people on the waiting list to get into this course that they ended up spinning it off into a not-for-profit. And it's been given it all sorts of big companies like SAP and the country of Bhutan has brought them in to train all their leaders. I mean, it's really a powerful practice.
Well, so here's a question for you then. I mean, you mentioned, you know, your own experience as a business owner. I know that a lot of the work I do, and even just saying this with clients or other colleagues and friends who are small business owners, whether they're a solopreneur or maybe just a smaller company, it's harder for them, I think, to prioritize something like mental hygiene, right? You can tell them that this is a good idea and they go, yeah, totally. I'm with you. They're nodding their head, but then they've got a bunch of emails to do. They've got to take care of this client. They've got to, you know, talk to this employee and there's just the busyness of life. What would you say to somebody who is, let's say that's a small business owner, just works in a smaller organization that does not have the unlimited resources that it seems Google has? Like, How can they actually bring this into their businesses and their lives when it feels like there's just no space for that?
So you're talking about no time space for that?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I had my first meditation teacher said to the group that was learning to meditate from him that if you're too busy to meditate, you're too busy. Okay. And that really stuck with me. He said it with like some force, you know, and then he like apologized the next week. He goes, maybe I shouldn't have been that abrupt. But I remember, that's like the thing I remember that he taught us. But my own personal experience is when you slow down, you have the capacity to speed up. And if you think about how much time we waste because you're scattered, like when you can't find something or you're, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever had the experience, you've been in the shower and you can't remember if you washed your hair or not. Like, so you do it again. Yeah. Like that happens to us all day long.
I do that to way too much information. I do that with my deodorant sometimes. Like I'll happily dress and I'm like, wait, did I? And then I just put it on again just to be sure. But yeah, I get it.
We all have stuff like that. So how much time do we waste because we're not being right here? There's a interesting statistic that 47% of the time our minds are somewhere other than where we are. Almost half the time we're thinking about something.
What did you say?
47% of the time.
I'm making it. Oh.
Sorry, I didn't get the joke.
No. Don't worry. You're busy teaching this really good stuff, and
it's funny. Yeah, and it's hard for us as speakers or presenters to think that what you mean they're not listening to me 100% of the time.
It's funny when people ask me for speaking advice. One of the first things I say is, understand, like, half the room's not even paying attention to you. They're like thinking about what they're going to make for dinner, the fact that they got to pick up the dry cleaning on the way home, the fight they had with their spouse, the fact that they got to get the report in next week. So don't stress out so much, because again, half the people aren't even listening to you.
Yeah. Or all the people half the time aren't listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
for sure.
And if you think about your life, like, let's forget business for a second. Do you have a new, you know, you have children, you have a new child.
And, yes, I got a little young one.
Yeah. So if, you know, sitting there or parents, or even if you have parents who are still alive, to think about half the time you're with them, what if you're really not with them?
Right.
You know, our kids are only really with us till they're 18, if it's even that long, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if half the time you're not really present with them, like, all the time you're missing. I think about the story of when my mom's passed away, I think it's about 5 years ago now. I always forget how long it's been, because I still, you know, think about her all the time.
Right.
And we were at a local community bank, which was slightly incredibly frustrating because it took forever for them to do anything. And I was sitting in there with her in her banker's office waiting for something. And I was on my phone checking emails, checking. Like, it wasn't there was a crisis with a client or in the office. And looking back, I'm so sorry I wasn't just with my mom. I mean, she's not here anymore.
Right.
And what a shame that I spent that time not being present with her. And I can't, you know, I can't get that back now.
Right. I try that all the time with my son. And I go, hey, he's not going to be this small all the time, or he's not going to want to, like, be around me all the time. So
right.
Yeah, don't check. I don't have to check my phone. And that doesn't mean that's easy. And that doesn't mean I still sometimes I'm not present, but even just going back to the idea of mindfulness, sometimes it's just being aware that you're not aware.
Right.
And then making a different decision, right?
And I think it's harder now, like with phones and distractions and there's lots of things pulling our attention that are super sticky. It's not, you know, it may be simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
Very aware of that.
No, I think it is really important that you kind of put some limits, especially, you know, technology is great, but a lot of the technology we use is trying to monetize our attention. So they are going to use every trick in the book to keep that attention. It's why I tell people, turn off all the notifications on your phone, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a simple one. But when I see people have just tons of notifications popping up from social media platforms or email or whatever it might be, I'm just like, they're just trying to get your attention. Doesn't mean you have to respond in that moment, but they don't care. They just want you to look.
Right, right.
And it's funny too, because I think mindfulness can often be perceived as this kind of woo-woo, you know, kind of tree hugger idea, like meditation, all these ideas. But when you were just talking there, I was having a conversation recently with somebody about Stephen Covey's four quadrants of time use. I don't know if you ever, are you familiar with that?
Sure.
The urgent importance, urgent, not urgent, important, but not important. And one of the things, if you haven't, I'll post a link in the show notes. But one of the things that he suggests is that if you're in quadrant two, which is important, but not urgent, the more you spend time there, in fact, what happens is the urgent matters that are important diminish, right? Because you don't have emergencies or things you forgot to do until the last minute. It's exactly what you just said, that if you slow down, you can actually speed up because you're not making mistakes. You're not ignoring things. You're really present. So if you think you don't have enough time, I'm reminded of what I used to tell people who were asking about sales conferences. I was like, if you don't think you have the money to be at a sales conference and to learn, that's why you need to be at that sales conference to learn how to make some money. Same thing with time. If you don't think you have the time, you got to do these practices to get the time.
Yeah. Can I just share a short safety story with this as well?
Absolutely.
So I was invited to go speak in Slovenia and Croatia, which was just so cool. It's part of my dream when I sold my business was to be able to travel and speak. And it was super fun. And I ended up in front of a group that was different than I expected it to be. There was a little bit less than, you know, I was not clear as I could have been with our group, and ended up being high school kids. I thought it was going to be all entrepreneurs, but regardless, okay. I ended up shifting the talk from and focusing on stuff I thought they'd be interested in. And it was on a little mini mindfulness talk. And I showed this video, which probably you've seen, where someone's walking, looking at their phone, and then falls into a fountain, and everyone laughs, even though it, you know, this poor woman fell into the fountain. And I was saying, we got to be careful with these, I've heard it called weapons of mass distraction, and how it can be so dangerous looking at our phones.
Yeah.
So then I would say less than 2 hours later, we had this lovely invitation to get into a small airplane and fly above this town in Slovenia where we were at. One of the women who was hosting us had a friend who did this, and was really great. And so we went up three at a time in the plane. And as we're leaving this small airport, I realized that I had to change the booking for a rental car when we were in Croatia. So I get on my phone and I'm on the Enterprise rental car site and I'm looking. And I walk into the wing of a plane and smash my face. Like, had no idea, not even like out of the corner of my eye. I just walked into, thank God the plane wasn't moving. It wasn't like a propeller. Yeah. And thank God I didn't actually do any real damage or get a concussion. I did way more. I bruised my ego way more than I bruised my face.
Right.
But, you know, going back to these are really simple ideas, but not always easy to do.
Yeah. Amen. I have friends that, know of my meditation practice and, you know, some of my close friends and still will give me a hard time when, you know, I do get distracted or I'm not paying attention or I get, you know, irritated or impatient.
You're being human.
Yeah. When I'm being human. Well, and I think that there was a great, I think I'm trying to remember where I read this, but I believe it was a book by, I forget her name. She's a Zen teacher here in the United States, but she pointed out, she goes, it's not so much that you'll notice benefits from meditation. It's just, you'll definitely notice when you're not meditating.
Yeah.
And, you know, I read that and I laughed and I was sharing it with my wife, and this is a couple of years ago. And to this day, she'll sometimes look at me and go, "How's meditation going?" And I'll be like, "I kind of haven't done it much lately." She's like, "I can tell," and I'm like, "All right, point taken. Thank you for the note."
That's funny. It sounds like she said it kindly too.
She always says it kindly, but she definitely, I mean, sometimes we do need that outside perspective to, you know, say to us, "Hey, you might want to revisit some of those tools you have."
Right.
So I like that. Just to completely switch gears, because I could just talk mindfulness for hours with you. Any fun beers you're drinking lately? Because, I mean, that's another form of mindfulness for me, just in being mindful while drinking a wonderful beer that a lot of love and malt has been put into.
Well,
I know you have some good taste in beer. What have you been drinking?
Yeah. So, So to be totally transparent, when you asked me this before, I texted my son. I'm like, "What was that beer we had in Croatia that I loved?" So, you know, that's one of the fun things about traveling too, is being able to try different beers. And I'm someone who likes a really light beer, kind of fruity, kind of citrusy.
Okay.
So I'm at the moment not remembering the beer that I had in Croatia, but I absolutely loved it. It was something blonde. Started with an L.
All right. So you got to figure it out. I will put it in the show notes.
I absolutely will get it to you.
When you get the answer to that. are there any light beers that you can actually remember the names of that you like? I mean, it's not a test. But I'm just curious.
I'm usually with other beer drinkers. But No, but I do like beers. I tend not to be someone who likes a really heavy kind of happy ale-y kind of, like, you know, that's not, it tends to be lighter and fruitier. That is more for my taste.
Gotcha. But I'm well, happy you must to have try been in heaven all. Then kind of, you know, as you said, Croatia, kind yeah. of that whole area. I mean, that's where Pilsners came from. It's where lagers came from. So,
and I'm not a huge wine beers. Drinker. They had amazing wines in Croatia as well. Really, really lovely.
You know, you're so. Not the first person to tell me that. And yeah. I know that that's why my wife wants to go. I'm pretty straightforward about the fact that I'm not very learned where the wines come in.
Yeah, but you, it's
I only
easy
have
to
so
get
many time, so much time to drink stuff. So I usually put that into beer,
right?
And tea, ironically. But okay, so we're gonna figure out what this Croatian beer is, because of course half the reason I have this podcast is just to get recommendations okay. for other good beers. So I want to know. but all right, again, we could talk beer and meditation for hours, but this probably is a good place for us to wrap things up. What is the best way, if somebody wanted to follow up with you, Ellen, what's like the best way for somebody to get a hold of you?
I would say at ellenrogin.com, ellenrogin.com. And there's some free resources there for people, and you can find out about me, my books, and yeah, I'd love to connect.
Very cool. And one question I always ask my guests at the end of the show is, what's one piece of advice you would give someone to help them have a better day today?
I would say to have a better day today, based on what we just talked about, is to be fully present in the next conversation you have and make it a mindful conversation. So you're really there with the person you're connecting with.
I love that. I love that. What a wonderful challenge. The next conversation, actually pay attention.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I also want to make sure that I do say thank you to Sketchbook Brewing, who sponsored this conversation. I have been drinking and am pretty much almost done with Brabant, which is their Belgian style dark ale. They have a whole list of wonderful beers. So look for them either if you're in the Evanston, Illinois area where their tap room is, or wherever you buy fine beer. Check them out. You'll love them. Thank you guys for supporting us. And everybody, go have a mindful day. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time here on Beer Beats and Business. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.